Lots of things go better together. Hockey, food, golf, peanut butter and jelly, Gojo and Golic, Taylor Swift and Travis Kelce. What? But if you really want to take things to the next level, drink some Labatt Blue Lights with your friends and live life to the power of we. Always enjoy responsibly. Beer, Labatt USA, Buffalo, New York.
I'm Alex Rodriguez.
And I'm Jason Kelly.
From Bloomberg, this is The Deal. Each week, you're here as in conversation with business icons.
This show will explore deal-making across sports, media, and entertainment.
That is a harsh lesson in business.
Sports is not as simple as bringing a bunch of big names together.
I didn't want to do another stomp you out speech.
It opened up so many more doors.
The show is called The Deal.
Listen to The Deal.
Listen to The Deal on Spotify.
You're listening to DraftKings Network.
Everybody, welcome to Gojo and Golic. Mike Golic Jr., Mike Golic Sr., Claudia Belafato here at the DraftKings studio in Boston. We got super producer Brandon in the studio out here, stage momming his ass off over here right now. He looks great. We got an even better show for you guys today. As always, make sure you download, subscribe, rate, review us. Leave us a five-star rating. Check us out here live Monday through Friday from 8 to 10 a.m. Eastern on the DraftKings Network, as well as the best of Gojo and Golic, noon to 1 p.m. Eastern, wherever you hear VSiN on the radio. Draft week rolling along. Oh. We are so close to being done with all the takes and actually just getting to see what these teams do. But in the meantime, Claudia, what do we have coming up today?
Are you guys going to even sleep tonight? It's like Christmas Eve, right?
It is kind of like Christmas Eve. It really is.
It is. Yeah. I can't wait. And we have all of your takes in here. Don't worry. So we were going to break these things
in the wine box.
See how many you got right in the wine box.
In the time capsule.
Wow, okay.
Why can't you just play along with the bit?
I'm sorry.
It's almost over. You know, it's almost over.
Yeah.
So close.
Okay. God, coming up on Gojo and Golic, where will Bo go? Bo Nix will join us ahead of the draft. South specific AFC and NFC South draft preview. And a day in the sun, McDaniels, who leads the Wolves to a game two win. Yep. Not who you thought it would be. We're going to talk a lot of hoops, guys, but we have to talk about what happened last night. Suns fall behind 0-2 to the Timberwolves. Pacers, Bucks tied up. Mavs, Clippers tied up. Lots of different storylines here. Of course, we have more games coming in for game two. Anything that really stuck out to you, Senior?
First, I'm happy you had to say South specific.
Yeah, that was hard to say.
That's a tough one.
Is it like a South Pacific play there? Is it a play off that?
Hey, you can't well past
that, could, that, well, could, I mean, that could be it.
One of the smartest people known to mankind.
I was an academic All-American.
Yes, you were. Just keep hanging on that one.
As you say, our producer Slate should be very proud of this. Lord knows I am. It is between getting through that and then Claudia, I mean, burying the lead. Two series have finally started now.
Yeah.
Series doesn't start until a road team actually wins a playoff game, and so we always have to exist in this existential limbo. We made it, baby.
The first, 11 games? It was 11-0 to the home team, so two out of the three last night go to the road team. So, yes, we finally have started a couple of series. Thank God.
Yeah, big time there. And so much of it, I feel like, has boiled down to star availability. And that's why it was interesting looking at the late game last night first, where the Dallas Mavericks get a win in the game that Kawhi Leonard returns in. And, Dad, this is kind of what we talked about the other day, is the difficulty of bringing back an injured star and not being sure exactly how much you're going to be able to get out of them, how much they're physically capable of at this point. And that's sort of been the looming cloud hanging over Kawhi for a while now during his Clippers tenure. But you saw it manifest last night, got going a bit in the second half, started to look more like himself. But Luka Doncic leading the defensive effort, not a typo, for the Dallas Mavericks, makes the difference in this game.
I loved after going to the last first after the game, he was asked by the whoever was interviewing, I forgot, was like, you're not specifically known for your defense. And then went into, you know, what made you kind of get after today. And it was just Luka basically didn't really get into it. It was just like, I just love basketball, man. It's what I wanted to do all my life. It's like there was really no answer.
Well, because he doesn't want to talk about defense.
Like,
if he's doing well on defense, Claudia, I'd have to imagine it's purely accidental in Luka's
mind. That was the issue, is he didn't deny the fact that he doesn't usually play defense. He's like, it's the playoffs. Okay, well, if you did that during the regular season, not that he doesn't have enough to do on his team.
Sure, but Luka Doncic is like a pass rush first pass specialist. If he makes a few plays in the run game, hey, that that's a luxury for you. And if Luka Doncic gives you defensive effort in addition to what he's doing for you as an offensive scorer, then, Dad, that's gravy for the Dallas Mavericks. Well, you got other people who are worse at basketball for that defense stuff.
It is. But on the other side with the Clippers, you got Kawhi Leonard back. You know, it was much like when Joel Embiid came back. You're like, okay, what are we going to get? Remember, they finished the regular season on an eight-win run. And as he was getting his win, and Kawhi Leonard kind of felt it last night. Now, he, again, had a lower body injury. So while you can practice and get ready cardiovascularly for the games, and he was still winded, you can't get ready for the banging. Because even though you can practice full.
Well, and they said he hadn't practiced with contact.
That's exactly that's where I was going.
Yeah.
He was practicing, but he wasn't getting knocked around in practice. So you can imitate the running, but you can't imitate the contact that goes on in a game. And you're not going to do it. You're not going to say, hey, Kawhi, let's get you ready and start banging you around in practice. That's not going to happen. Mm-hmm. So he had to get used to that. Started, as you said, heating up a little bit in the second half.
I laughed, Claudia, because I saw one moment in particular that was the most relatable thing for me and Kawhi Leonard as someone who's been nursing a back injury most of this week. I saw at one point when Kawhi did get knocked down in the game, and it took him so long within the body of that play to get back up. I was like, that is a man in his mid-30s trying to figure out how to gut his way through this.
And the issue with this team is, we sort of said heading into the playoffs, he needs to be healthy. That has been the issue with him. But it was sort of the flip side. They won without him. Then he was back in the fold. It's going to take some time for the team together to figure that out with him being long.
What he was 7-17, missed all five of his threes in this one. So did play 35 minutes. So the wind will come back. Started to get better in the second half. And in all honesty, listen, they had the lead at halftime. Did the Clippers? They built that to I believe it was a 6-point lead. And then Dallas went on a 14-0 run. And that was kind of while the Clippers brought it back to 3 points a couple of times, one time I think with 20 seconds ago, 93-90, they just couldn't overcome. And Dallas gets that much-needed win on the road.
So Luka Doncic, 32-9, which pretty normal offensive night for him, like ho-hum by Luka Doncic standards there. But according to ESPN Stats and Info, the Clippers, 2 of 17 from the floor when Luka Doncic was the primary defender. They missed all 11 shots that Luka Doncic contested, the second most field goal attempts contested without allowing a make in a playoff game over the last 5 years.
Wow.
Things I never anticipated reading about Luka Doncic, who, listen, helped seal the game at the end, too, some big shots the way that we're used to, and feeling it. Like, it was awesome to see. You got him and Kawhi Leonard really going dueling pianos at the end, both making big shots, especially from distance that looked like the difference in this game. And so, Dad, the Dallas Mavericks, who were another team you talk about getting hot at the end of the season, Luka's MVP case building down the home stretch of the year here, carrying over into the postseason against the Clippers team that, listen, we still all kind of don't know. It's a grab bag of what to expect from them on any given night. James Harden does appear to kind of be the constant in terms of being the guy that's the creator for them, at least being able to initiate offense. I saw Bomani Jones having the conversation the other day about, hey, Paul George's role in all this. Fascinating. A guy who's lived well as the one option on certain teams and lived well as the three option on certain teams. But in that ground in between can sometimes get a little blurry.
Yeah, and you wonder with Harden, sometimes he comes up big, but we've seen sometimes, you know, he just clanks him. Last night, one of those nights, just 2 of 10 from three-point land. As a team, they stunk. They shot, you know, under 27% from three-point land, so they weren't hitting those. You had 4 of the 5 starters for Dallas in double figures. So now, again, we always talk about the non-stars, what they can do. Can you get something from them on the road? You know you can get something from them at home, but they pull out this win and now grab home court from the Clippers. And you always wonder with the age of some of the players, and certainly add in the injury to Kawhi Leonard, how longer series go and how they hang.
I mean, this is also just extraordinary. Like, you're trying to overcome so much meme inertia if you're the Clippers. You're already the Clippers. So we're a team that's used to watching you fall short of expectations. Even during your best years, during the Lob City years, like, we were always conditioned to wait for you to fail. And then postseason James Harden on top of that, as the person that's supposed to be the guy you're counting on right now in the midst of, again, you know, Paul George stood on his head back a couple playoffs ago when it was just him out there when injury kind of rendered the rest of that team off the court. But now James Harden having to be the dude, like, we're asking you to overcome forces that are much larger than basketball in this series. So anyone expecting the Clippers to win, I mean, God, you were already barking up the wrong
tree. Yeah, you were, and it's going to turn into a unicorn series because we've talked about Dallas and defense. So already, I mean, you just kind of throw everything to the wind there. I mean,
so it sounds like you guys are high on the Mavs. I want to bring in the odds then at the DraftKings Sportsbook. Right now, the Mavs are the favorite to win this series at minus 135. Now, the fact that they're heading home, though, that number's going to get a lot more juiced if they win the next one or the next two. How many games do you see this going, Senior? And would you bet that price now at minus 135? Because that's probably the cheapest you'll get.
I mean, they did exactly what you need to do when you're the road, when you're, you know, the road team in a series.
Sure.
And don't have home court advantage. You get one on the road. That's what they did. So series goes to their favor. We thought this was going to be a close series, and by seeding, it was going to be a
sure.
close series. So, now you kind of sway toward Dallas a little bit. I think you still wonder about Harden because you see him be hot, you see him be cold. Kawhi Leonard's going to be kind of that X factor of how quickly can he get back to what he is. And because the expectation that we're going to talk about Dallas's defense
right.
more than a couple of times in this series is pretty much not going to happen.
No, not likely. So I could see this series going six. Like, I do think the Clippers, now that you've integrated Kawhi back into the lineup again, that'll get a little bit easier to figure out, all right, exactly what we think we're going to get. This is kind of like a bunch of jabs early on in most of these postseason series. So I could see this going in six, but I picked Dallas to win this one. I think at this point, that's the side that I can trust with this tandem. And I'm kind of excited for the future of them. We've talked about this before, but Luka and Kyrie now going forward with Kyrie, I believe, eligible for an extension again this summer, right? I'd have to look at
that. That sounds right. I'll check.
It feels spiritually right. But either way, excited about the future, excited about the present. I think I'm a little bit distracted because, Claudia, I'm really excited to talk about the Timberwolves right now. Not a thing I came in expecting to say.
I am too.
But the prophet that is Anthony Edwards, now watching his prophecy come to fruition last night, has become my favorite thing in sports.
Yeah, and I would usually say if you're looking into the future, it would be Anthony Edwards going off in the postseason. We've seen it before. But no, it was Jaden McDaniels, and Anthony Edwards actually predicted this would happen. Edwards just 15 points last night, Cat only 12 in 24 minutes. Jaden McDaniels, though, 25 points, 8-3, career postseason best, stepped up big on defense, one of the best defensive players on the floor. And this all resurfaced a clip from last year where Anthony Edwards said, yeah, you guys better start believing in him. He was asked, how are you guys going to stop KD? And he said, they got KD, but we have Jaden McDaniels.
Yeah.
McDaniels was asked about the viral comment after the game. Here's what he had to say.
Can't know what he's talking about. So just, I mean, we love to compete. So it's just something for me just to kind of have a chip on my shoulder, knowing that, like, I still got to go out here and show people that I can play defense, I can guard KD, and just I can score as well. So just being myself, really.
So he missed the first round of last year because he broke a hand with frustration, punching a wall. So clearly passion out of this guy, which you love to see. Is this a one-game thing? Are we going to continue to see this? How did Ant see this coming, though, Gojo?
You know what? Some guys just know. And also maybe recognize that passion in others, because I think the fun thing about this Timberwolves team is Anthony Edwards is a guy that leads with emotion. He is this incredible ball of energy that we've seen harnessed more and more, what he's done as a guy that creates plays for other people, in addition to being able to call his own number. All of that's been great, and so I'm sure he can see that in other people. And listen, for Jay McDaniel, incredibly long, talented, like matching up with Kevin Durant, a difficult prospect for most mere mortals because we're used to seeing him, Dad, get the ball at the top of the key, just be able to turn and shoot over most dudes. So being able to stick him, that's great. The fun part about this Timberwolves team for me is you've got that going on because you had a guy, especially last night, like Mike Conley, as the adult in the room. And I think as you look at this series, the thing we always wondered about the Suns is, what are they going to be able to do in pivotal moments when they don't have an actual floor general out there? You had your big three out there, but you don't necessarily have someone like Mike Conley, who they said, hey, I know I could score 30 a game. That's not my job on this team. He's the governor on this team. You see him bring the ball up the court in a pivotal moment, let's slow things down. Let's get to the action that we need to get to be successful here. And that allows guys like Jaden McDaniel, guys like certainly Anthony Edwards, to be able to go out there and flourish.
I still remember years ago during contracts, and we always see this because we get surprised, when Mike Conley was the highest paid player in the NBA.
Yeah, what a time.
I mean, it's amazing to think about where that's all gone. But in a game where guys you count on, you know, Anthony Edwards and Kat, they had 7 points combined at halftime. Karl Anthony Towns had 3 fouls in the first quarter. That's the thing you always hate to see, because then he's got to sit on the bench. So who else is going to step up? What McDaniels did, obviously, offensively, because defensively, I mean, you look at him defensively, anybody he's guarding, the Suns players he's guarding, they shot under 29% when he's been guarding them. So you're getting that from the defensive side. But then when you pop in 25 on the offensive side, well, when you needed it, when your stars were not producing the way they normally produce, or the expectation is, that's what I always talk about in these postseason series, or whether it's one game or a series, who is that person that steps up and gets out of what they normally do and adds? You know, McDaniels with 25 points is doing that to help also off his defensive side. So that's what you need, somebody to step up. Again, Phoenix up 1.5 in this one, 51-50, and they just kind of got worn down.
Well, because that's the thing is, they needed this, because normally Minnesota had gone all in on the two towers approach to this, right? Karl Anthony Towns and Rudy Gobert. Rudy Gobert fresh off most NBA players telling them they think he's overrated and they don't like him. Karl Anthony Towns still trying to work his way back from injury, that late season knee surgery that they had worked him back from in the lead up to the playoffs. And Yusuf Nurkic came in like an absolute missile and just decided to bully them in the first half. Went for 10 and 14 in this game, but physically set a tone inside that they were not matching early on in this game. But to your point, got them into foul trouble, got them out of the rotations they wanted to be in player-wise. And so I thought that was going to be the story. If you had stopped this after the first half, I thought the story was going to be Yusuf Nurkic comes in and bullies what's supposed to be part of the core of this Minnesota Timberwolves team. And instead, Jaden McDaniels comes to the rescue, like you said, not only defensively, but offensively, offsetting Anthony Edwards, who is still the star of this team.
Yeah, he is.
But last night, the Suns treated him like that.
Right,
they threw
right.
bodies at him all the time. They built the wall for him in the paint and made sure he wasn't going to be the one, like right. in game one, to get them again.
It's that, do you let the star, you know, it was way back in the Jordan days, you let Jordan get his 50 and stop everyone
sure.
else and win, which could happen, or do you try and stop him and see who else is going to step up, or can someone else step up? And McDaniels did, because they even shot horribly from three-point land. They were in the 20% from three-point shooting as well. So it's not like they were lights out, you know, shooting from deep. So who is that other guy that steps up? That's always been a key thing for me.
The others.
Yeah, 28% from the three for the Timberwolves. So let me ask you this, bringing back the odds. Timberwolves, of course, when you're up 2-0, you're going to be a heavy favorite. Minus 400, though, now going on the road. This is the point where you would grab the Suns. If you have faith, they do turn it around at plus 330. So that asks the question, do they turn around, senior, from what you've seen?
I don't have faith in them doing that. I think Minnesota's too good with what they have. They got, you know, as we talked about, anybody with injuries coming back, with Embiid coming back, with Kawhi coming back, Kat coming back, you know, how quickly do you simulate yourself back in from a conditioning standpoint? I just think they're too good, you know, with Phoenix, and we're going to find another team that Kevin Durant has gone to where they can't get over the hump, like in Brooklyn, which was an absolute, you know, mess, and now in Phoenix, where you're hoping with Beal and Booker and Durant, you had that three that you want, even though Beal had missed some time during the year,
that
you'd finally get the run. It's not going to happen.
I guess that's the thing, though. It's the same story that we saw in Brooklyn, which is, hey, you came in with the best plans of trying to be one of the last few teams that's really microwaving results with great players all coming together at once like that, at least in the current landscape of the NBA. But they just didn't have enough time together. It was the same thing in Brooklyn. Now, injury in the postseason ended up undermining them too. But you had that year, I think it was something ridiculous, like 7 combined games with the big three together. But the Suns weren't much better this year in having those guys all on the court at the same time. And again, I'll go back to, in certain moments, you're kind of wondering who's in charge and who's there to facilitate for everybody else when you've got all these great potent scoring options versus on the other side. Again, like the indelible image from last night to me was Mike Conley just bringing the ball, calming everybody down. Like, hey, the night's not going well for you, calm everybody down. Karl Anthony Towns in foul trouble, so we got to act a little bit differently. Calm everybody down. He was the adult in the room for that team last night, and I think the fact that you've got all of these complementary parts on that team, it's not to say they can be what Denver's being, because Denver's the ultimate example of, like, you've got a bunch of guys on that team that all do different things that fit really well together. You got Michael Porter Jr. as the knockdown shooter on the outside. You've got Jokic, obviously, as the straw that serves the drink. Jamal Murray as your clutch shot maker at the end. Aaron Gordon, as I said, one of the most unique forces at power forward in the NBA. you don't necessarily have that, but you do have this unique blend of big man talent in there, Mike Conley on the outside, Anthony Edwards as this unique gravity on the court. And so they're a really interesting out in the Western Conference as we start to potentially look ahead. A
couple of notes on both teams. Grayson Allen, who's had a career year.
Oh, huge moment
in
the third quarter.
17 minutes last night, third quarter, rolls an ankle, doesn't come back. X-rays were negative. They'll see where that goes. And for Minnesota, since 1992, between baseball, basketball, and hockey franchises, they've combined for 43 playoff series. They've been up 2-0 in just 4 of those. So this is not an area they're used to being in.
No.
2-0 in a series. But they're in command of this series as it now goes back to Phoenix. And that, to me, they're just the better team.
A very happy Alex Rodriguez in a cream sweater on the sideline of this game. Just don't mind that we're going through mediation with the whole sale of the franchise. Just watch what's going on the court. Coming up next, though, an interesting day on and off the court for Tyrese Maxey and the 76ers. We'll crash land into the 2-minute report coming out of Philadelphia next here on Gojo and Golic.
Hey, Dad, what do you do when you're out with friends, the waiter comes up and tries to take everybody's order, but the whole table freezes up and everyone's looking at each other trying to find some help?
That's a great question. So what should I do?
You should have some confidence, Dad, or as our friends at Jägermeister call it, shotfidence. If everyone's having trouble ordering, here's what you do. You take charge, you grab the bull by the horns, you find that dog in you, and you make an executive decision. And just order for the table, a round of ice-cold Jägermeister shots. Damn, that's cold. Because apparently, we've all been drinking Jägermeister wrong.
Did not know that. How should we be drinking it?
Glad you asked, Dad. We should be drinking it ice-cold at 0 degrees Fahrenheit.
Well, that brings up other things that I love ice cold as well. And I'll tell you right out of the gate, that's going to be a candy bar pulled out of the freezer. That's my way of eating candy.
Oh, I love it. On the golf course out there, you get to the turn in the middle of the round there, and you get to that little clubhouse there, and they've always got the candy bar options, and I always see they've usually got a little box of them in the freezer, and it always makes it better on a hot day out on the golf course, taking a bite of that cold, cold chocolate and getting ready to go for the rest of my round. It's the same way with Jägermeister. So wherever you are, if you're hanging out with friends at the bar, call the shots. Cheers with ice-cold shots of Jägermeister. Damn, that's cold.
And remember to check out Jägermeister at www.draftkingsxjägermeister.com. Remember, drink responsibly. Jägermeister liqueur, 35% alcohol by volume, imported by Mast Jägermeister US, White Plains, New York.
Welcome back to Gojo and Golic. We fell into the trap, guys. We got caught up by the NBA TV game. NBA TV game.
Yeah, we did. Yep.
Pacers-Bucks happened last night, but it happened on NBA TV, so that can kind of be a tree falls in the woods situation for some people here. But, Dan, the Pacers, big recovery, big response, went out here and got it done, 125-108. The cannon goes the other way this time around, and Pascal Siakam, a big night to now notch this series, another series in the NBA playoffs that has started at this point. So wanted to give them the love that they deserve.
So a guy that comes over from the Raptors, so he has that, obviously, that playoff and championship experience from that 2019 Raptors championship team, went for 36 in game one in the loss, 37-11
consistent
last night in getting the win. You know, they kind of had to offset Dime, you know, Damian Lillard, what he's been, Dame, I should
call
say,
Dime.
Not Dime, I've called him Dime. Dime. Well, he is an assistant.
Dime 10.
He will assist, guys, but Dame.
Sure.
Yeah.
I like
we'll go with that. I just misspoke. How about that?
All right, there you go. That's cool,
here's
too.
Here's a guy who,
a guy.
Well, first about Siakam. First, whenever you're listed with Chamberlain, you have to read the stat.
Oh, there we
right?
go, yeah.
First NBA player to open a postseason with consecutive 35-10 performances, says Wilt in 1967. So, again, when you're mentioned with Wilt, you gotta mention that. Damian Lillard has been incredible. 35 in the first half of game one, 26 in the first half in this game as well, finished with 34. So he has been hot in the first half of these games, but not enough. Last night, Giannis still out. Remember, he strained that calf. He's been out.
This looked a little bit more like the team that didn't have their best player on the court than game one.
Exactly. So, you know, when are you getting him back? You know, how soon can he get back? Now, again, another series that just started because we finally had two road wins, as we talked about. You know, they get in the road win now against Milwaukee as a series will go back to Indianapolis now. So, a good Siakam is such a monster pickup for them. We've talked about this team. Are they happy to get there? You know, because it's been a while for them, you know, to start to build again. But, you know, they're like, yeah, we're gonna make this move right now.
Yeah, they're going to make this move right now on NBA TV where none of us saw it. So
they'll be back
I have to say, with Giannis out too, it just doesn't really help their case much. I know that they have Dame, but it's like, is anybody really wanting to watch the Pacers? And then without Giannis, it's just a tough sell. Well, I get it.
We've seen this before from Dame. Like, we know what it looks like when it's Dame and we wanted to see what it looked like with Dame and another massive superstar. And we're not getting that yet, and we feel a little bit robbed. It is interesting comparing this, and we'll get to Tyrese Maxey's interesting night as we get to the games coming up tonight. I saw this just now, though, kind of scrolling the timeline. Dominic Foxworth, great podcast, him and his producer Charlie Kravitz, were talking about the conversation around Nikola Jokic. We're handing out awards in the NBA. Tyrese Maxey got his for most improved last night. They talked about that with the Inside the NBA crew that we can get to. But Nikola Jokic up for another MVP. Most people assume he's the odds-on favorite to win it again here. After a year ago, we were having the conversation around the MVP race with him and Embiid where, now he hasn't won a championship, so can we really put him in this class of accomplished players all time without that hardware in a sport that we seem to demand that of? And now it's almost gone the other way where people are bending over backwards to be overwhelmingly effusive with praise on Nikola Jokic because he notched that one championship. Dad, do you think water's going to find its level at some point? Because I saw Dominique try to make the point that there aren't a lot of players with one championship that we allow to dominate the conversation like this. Giannis Antetokounmpo is a great example of a guy who, hey, got that championship early on, so it kind of cut him off from a lifetime of those conversations around, he hasn't gotten the ring yet. Is he going to be one of the greatest to ever do it without a ring? Now it seems like we've so gone the other way where we had all these pent-up kind things to say about Jokic that people didn't want to say in public, and now we're just letting the floodgates open up.
Yeah, but also it gets to now you win multiple, right? It's not just you got to get that one. Kind of like with Peyton Manning. When he got the one, it was like, can he get multiple? Because if you're going to start comparing people to some of the greatest ever, normally those players have multiple championships. But I get what you're saying about Jokic. It would have been interesting had Embiid been healthy all year because he was having the year, right?
Oh, his first half of the season.
He was having the year. Now, again, doesn't have a championship to his name in the process there as they're trying to build one. But with Jokic, I mean, it's down to three. Him, SGA, and Luka, right?
Every Joker's straw poll you've seen, every article that takes some sort of not account of this, it seems like Jokic is going to be the guy, even if Luka has had a phenomenal. Honestly, Luka's had the kind of season we used to reward Jokic for. Claudia, you're balking a little bit over.
No, I'm saying poor. I'm trying to find the odds right now if they're still up. I'm just saying poor Luka because of everything that he does. And now he's actually playing defense and the fact that he can't be the credit for most of
it.
I'm sorry, but he is clearly the most valuable player. You pluck him off that team.
Jokic off the Nuggets. I don't think it looks anywhere close to this.
They definitely have more depth,
Here's where I always disagree about that argument. We always say take him off the team. You take the star off any team, they're not winning the championship. That's what we're talking about, right?
But Dallas, more specifically,
if you don't win the championship without Luka and don't win the championship without Joker, it doesn't matter?
It's not just the binary of that. It's how far do they fall? How different is that team without that player there? Perfect example. We're talking about this Pacers series without Giannis. They blew the Pacers out in game one without the best player on their team. It's a bit of a different impact because the skill set's very different. That's why Luka, to Claudia's point, certainly offensively what he means there, but that's why I'll push back on the notion with Jokic and the Nuggets. That dude creates everything for that team. That's not to diminish what Jamal Murray means to them as a point guard, but man, what he does for the rest of that offense overall, I think cannot be overstated. It's just funny because, Dad, this is the position he was in years ago, winning the MVP on a 6 seed in the Western Conference, that people were looking and going, can you be that valuable when the team has only been so good and successful? He showed yes back then. Luka should be the beneficiary of that now. The problem is he's run into final form Nikola Jokic that's got the championship hardware and is still playing like the best player in the world.
So with Luka and with SGA, if either one of them gets a crack at Denver and Jokic and beats them, then going into next year, if they have that monster year, that's what could put somebody over the top. to take out Jokic.
They would, but that's the biggest difference is neither of those teams, in my mind, is situated to match up.
We were
talking about it before the show. Like, the Timberwolves are interesting and out to give them. I think Oklahoma City would be a pretty terrible matchup to go against Denver.
Oh, I agree with you.
He's saying a strong hypothetical.
Yeah, it is. That is, believe me, it's a hypothetical. But it's a way of putting somebody ahead of Jokic because Jokic is going to win it this year. But that would be a way of maybe going into next year saying that one of those guys, if they have another monster year, could be ahead of Jokic, even though it's a regular season award. But if you saw one of those guys, one of those teams, and if one of those teams beat Denver, it would be because either one of those guys.
Well, then you have Mount Everest expectations, though. So it's almost like anything you do the next season is just going to be seen as a disappointment.
But a lot of times it is that. Especially if it's a guy, a person who hasn't won it, it's you had a great year and you sometimes don't get the recognition you deserve until you do it again the next year.
Right.
Right?
Oh, I think there is something to the inertia of that. Like, you've got to build up and bank that equity with people. But that's why it's a regular season award, but it's got a postseason hangover.
Exactly right.
Because so much of that reputation, that inertia, gets built when you're in the postseason. Yep. It's why, hey, we took a year off from Nikola Jokic, and what did he do? He went ahead and won a championship. So in the back of your mind, we've seen plenty of MVPs for years. There's been that thing where a lot of them don't even make the conference finals in the year that they win the award, and people end up kind of feeling this little bit of, like, tinge of, oh, did we get this wrong? Did we do something? I think Nikola Jokic now gives you some of that warm fuzzy of, hey, he's clearly putting up numbers in the regular season. Some of the deep statistics, especially win shares per 48 and a lot of those other things, all skew heavily in favor of him. And now you've got the backdrop of, oh, that's clearly the best team in basketball.
Right.
Oh, we feel like they've got a real good chance to repeat. And so if you're a voter, whether that's subconscious or not, I think in the back of your mind, you've got that assurance that you've bought something that has that assurance.
You feel like you got the payoff,
right?
Even though the postseason has nothing to do with the MVP, you feel like you got the payoff for getting it right in that situation. So, but I agree. I don't think anybody can knock off Denver in the West anyway. So my hypothetical is not going to happen.
I saw where you were going with it. But I'm trying.
I'm trying.
2-hour show. We got to throw out hypotheticals.
Trying to do something here.
Congratulations to Tyrese Maxey for winning the Most Improved Player of the Year.
I know.
I'm sorry we let Nikola Jokic bogart your segment.
But it's
you
MVP.
This. Sorry, that's showbiz, baby, because coming up next, we got to take a look at the South as we get ready for the NFL draft here. Next on Gojo and Golic.
I'm Alex Rodriguez.
And I'm Jason Kelly.
From Bloomberg, this is The Deal. Each week, you'll hear us in conversation with business icons.
This show will explore deal-making across sports, media, and entertainment.
That is a harsh lesson in business.
Sports is not as simple as bringing a bunch of big names together.
I didn't want to do another stomp you out speech.
It opened up so many more doors.
The show is called The Deal.
Listen to The Deal.
Listen to The Deal on Spotify.
NFC South and some of the biggest needs ahead of tomorrow's NFL draft. And speaking of the NFC South, the Falcons and Eagles, well, the Falcons, also the Eagles, were being looked into for offseason tampering allegations. However, not concluded, but it looks like if it's going to affect the draft, it'll be next year, not this year. So the Falcons should remain with their number 8 pick overall. UCLA's Leiatu Latu is the favorite to go to them at plus 150. And then Bama's Dallas Turner at plus 175. Decent drop off to the rest of the group. So guys, as you look at those odds and look at some other speculations, Schefter says maybe Michael Penix Jr. will drop to them. What makes the most sense? What do you think is the best?
Not that.
I love it. Everyone's just throwing out their fastball for these last couple of days now.
You know what? You could throw out anything. Anything. See our social media at some point. We'll do that. Throw out anything out
there. We're hearing a lot.
We're here, boy. We're here, and we're all hearing stuff.
Our sources are telling us some pretty crazy stuff.
Crazy things happen, though.
I can't even begin to tell you some of the rumors that we're hearing.
But, Dad, I will say this is also the time. It was draft week a few years ago where – all of a sudden, late in that week, Baker Mayfield shoots up to the number 1 overall pick in the draft. Like, the reason we believe some of this stuff, or at least have to take pause, is because in the past, we've seen it actually come to fruition. Now, with Atlanta, it's interesting as you look at the NFC South. Obviously, Kirk Cousins made this conversation very different for them heading into the draft this year. They get to start off with a guy coming off of an Achilles injury, there's certainly questions about that. But a defense that was vastly improved last year, a new regime coming over here with a defensive-minded head coach in Raheem Morris, and the eighth overall pick in a draft that's really interesting defensively, because Claudia mentioned the two guys at the top of the odds there, and Leatu Latu and Dallas Turner, completely different players, right?
Yeah.
Leatu Latu, we're talking about this, the most, I think, complete pro-ready of these edge rushers in this class in terms of what he offers you in pass rushing prowess. And Dallas Turner, a lot more in line with what we've seen this Atlanta franchise pick in recent memory, which is incredibly toolsy player with upside. Reminds me a lot of the guys that they've tended to major in. So part of me wants to say, hey, maybe you go for something that's a little bit more fully formed in Latu that you can get on the field right now. All these guys have some flaws defending the run, but Latu, at the very least, comes in as a fully formed NFL pass rusher.
He does, and a lot of people, you wonder sometimes when you say a more ready pro. Like, when I look at that as far as, like, say, interior D linemen, those are guys that use their hands better. Because I think that's one of the biggest transitions a D lineman, especially interior, has to make to the NFL is how well you use your hands. For the outside, for these edge rushers, how well can you hold up against a run? Certainly is something that can help make you a complete player. But, Mike, a lot of times these edge rushers are so good that they rarely have to go into their counters. So, to me, a more ready guy is a guy that has some counter moves, because I don't care how great you were in college, especially if you had one great move, whether it was turning the corner on a low dip or a rip or coming underneath on a spin, whatever it was, you are going to have to expand your toolbox on your counters, because you are not going to get away with one move in the NFL coming from college. So that's one of the bigger things, I think, as well. Guys that are ready and already have some counters in their toolbox.
I'd probably, at this point, you're fine with both. I'd probably take Latu at this point. I understand the injury history is a bit of a concern.
Yeah, yeah.
Dallas Turner, the way he moves is so incredibly enticing. Like, I remember again,
I agree.
He was the forbidden fruit on the other side of Will Anderson Jr. last year, where you'd see one player who was ruthlessly efficient and the other who just did these things naturally that few people on earth can do. But I think that's going to be the route that they probably go there. That defense made huge strides and improvements last year.
I agree.
While the offense fluttered with Desmond Ridder, a chance to be more complete, provided Kirk Cousins comes back and is normal Kirk Cousins. Dad, let's look at the New Orleans Saints. I saw yesterday, I think it was Daniel Jeremiah, that said, find me a team that has a need more pressing than the Saints and offensive tackle in this draft. And they missed on Trevor Penning in the draft a few years ago out of, I believe, Northern Iowa. You've got Ryan Ramczyk, who's, been getting up there now. Yep. And so I think there's a premium here. 14, you're still going to be within range some really good guys, I think.
You are, and it's a shame for old linemen at times, because people who watch the draft sometimes see an O lineman, they're like, oh, it's kind of that unsexy pick, right? But it's really not. I mean, it's a cornerstone.
It's incredibly sexy.
It's an app. Well, don't get carried away.
Hot.
It's an absolute cornerstone for an offensive line, protection, run blocking, and what you need to get somebody locked up on that line. So I think it's deemed that way outside of quarterbacks and wide receivers, this is such a deep offensive line, especially offensive tackle draft, that you're going to get. And you were talking about grass and the such before the show, and it seemed like the best hit rate for first round picks at a position to sign second contracts with their team was offensive tackle. So that's the stability of that position.
So Sam Hoppen, who does a great job, data scientist, works over at Fantasy Pros now. Adam Schefter put out this chart that our buddy Paul Hemmachides put out about the hit rate of players in positions picked in the first round over the last 20 years. So from 2000 to 2019, Sam went a step further and broke it down based on guys who signed second contracts, multi-year extensions with the team that drafted them. And since 2000, between 2000 and 2019, so in that two-decade span, no position signed multi-year deals with the team that drafted them at a higher rate than offensive tackle. It tends to be blue-chip stock that you buy at that position. And so as we look at that, We talked with Duke Manyweather yesterday about a guy he's training in Olu Fashanu out of Penn State. Would be a home run there. Talisi Fuaga. But I think those guys could be off the board by then. J.C. Latham has had a big offseason. The offensive tackle out of Alabama. An absolute monster. I mean, we talk about bubble butts when it comes to offensive line in the draft.
Yeah.
This dude's got a lower body that makes GMs and scouts salivate. I think he could be a great pickup there for them at 14. The Tampa Bay Buccaneers down at 26, Dad. This is a really interesting team. Brought back Baker Mayfield. This offense gonna look a little bit different since their offensive coordinator got hired by the Carolina Panthers. But the people looking and mocked there, a lot of offensive line, edge rusher there, which could be Chop Robinson range out of Penn State.
Right, because
an interesting prospect.
They lost Shaq Barrett on the defensive side, and Latu again if he's going to be there. And you mentioned him before. We should say the injury issue. This is a guy that retired from football.
Yeah.
He retired from football with a neck injury and then came back. So, yeah, you could see where people may have a concern there. But I love watching that kid play, though.
I do, too. I think down there you look to some of the recent draft picks missing on edge rusher there. That defense in general going through going to be a little bit of an overhaul there. But I don't know. I could see Chop Robinson probably coming off the board there because, again, I don't see Latu being there. It's going to depend on who else that edge class pushes down potentially there. What happens with Jared Verse, the prospect out of Florida State?
He's the guy, remember, is he a guy that could be, someone's going to drop. Is he a guy that could be a dropping edge rusher? We'll wait and see. It always happens, so we'll find out on Thursday there. But I do think they end up going edge rusher.
Yeah, this is really, again, these are the defending division champion Tampa Bay Buccaneers who surprised everybody with the roster last year. So where they choose to add interior offensive line in a group that's been re-raking itself since the Super Bowl also could be on the board. And then there's the Panthers, who don't own a first-round pick this year, traded theirs to the Chicago Bears last year in the trade to go up and get Bryce Young. And this offseason, they've been busy, Dad. They went out here and said, all right, we've got a small quarterback who struggled mightily last year. We went and spent a ton of money on offensive line to bring in Damian Lewis and Robert Hunt to try and protect him there. On the other side, you lost edge rusher big time in Brian Burns, Frankie Louvu, your linebacker also gone. So that could be a route to go. But, Dad, we know the charge for the Panthers this year is get weapons around Bryce Young, revitalize Bryce Young. And so you'd imagine wide receiver going to be the flavor of the day for them at the top of the second
round. This, to me, is a no-brainer. We talked about the depth of the offensive tackle. Wide receiver position is the deepest, I think, in this draft, right? So you're going to be able to get some quality at that point. And you have to understand last year, I think he's 32 or 33, Adam Thielen led the team in receptions with 103. The next closest was Jonathan Mingo, the wide receiver, with 43.
Yeah.
I mean, so that is absolutely the route they have to go.
And I think here the thing what was, even with Adam Thielen, is they didn't have anyone that could get open. You looked around and stopped the tape for Bryce Young. You're looking and it's tight window throws everywhere. You need a professional route runner, and my God in heaven, Ladd 2D McConkey has been remixing dudes in the SEC for years now. The guy might be eligible for a pension plan at this point, but I think you get him there if he's still on the board. He's a guy that could leak into the back end of the first round. If Ladd is available, run. Don't walk to get the guy from the other SEC school that Bryce Young used to have to pay attention to.
Gojo and Golic, the NCAA is speeding up the process for D1 players to play after they transfer. So now the new rule states if you transfer, you can play immediately if you meet the specific academic requirements. Previously, the rule was that one time you can transfer and immediately play, but then you have to sit out a year if you transfer a second time. So Gojo, what sort of impact do you think this will have immediately to the D1 athlete?
So it's funny, like, this already felt like the world that we were living in college athletics.
Yeah, it did. Yeah. It did.
Like, when we went through that whole song and dance with Tez Walker at North Carolina last fall where there was the NCAA waiver discrepancy at the beginning of the season and he wasn't allowed to play after technically transferring twice, even though that wasn't fully the extent of the situation, we were all a little shocked because those had just been getting passed through. Those waivers had been a foregone conclusion until the NCAA decided, oh, we want to actually be able to punish something. And everyone yelled at them and they stopped doing that. So this had already kind of been happening. Now it just makes it a little bit easier. And for coaches, I'm sure this is another headache for them because now this is even more freedom for players at a time where that's going to be overwhelming flavor of the day. But this is kind of the way that college football and college athletics have been going, where dad, player rights are going to be increasingly more available because the higher courts are rightly looking at the NCAA system and going, yeah, you guys have been getting this wrong for far too long, and nobody is on your side anymore.
If you just Google college football right now, all the stories you're going to see is this team, this player in the portal, this team picked up this player from the portal. That's all you see right now, because another time period just entered after spring ball. The portal opens back up, which we're going to get to. The really only guardrail anymore is you can't transfer mid-year and play for two teams in the same year.
I know. We're still not quite there yet.
I would imagine that's a pretty good one to stick. We're never getting that one. So at least there's that. Coaches had to be throwing their hands up. I mean, even more. I don't know how even more, because it already felt like, you said, we were there anyway. Now it's official that we're there. You basically can be a free agent every year. You basically have more movement than professional athletes have.
Oh, no, like, you don't. I mean, you 100%
you
do because
you absolutely
they've got,
do.
They've got locked in contracts. They've got terms to these deals here. And because one side, the NCAA, the Power Five, the member institutions, because remember, schools are involved and culpable in this also, they decided they did not want to treat the business like a business.
Right.
And so when everybody else looked at the business and saw it for being a business and decided to treat it like a business, they didn't get to make the rules. That's the mistake they made in all this, is when you hold the power, you had a chance to create the rules of the new world that was coming, but because you wanted to plug your head in the sand, now everybody else gets to draw this up in the dirt, and at every turn, you're being told, no, we're not on your side anymore. You had your chance.
So let me preface everything by first saying,
oh,
this
boy.
Is not
oh, boy.
Going to hurt college football on the field. Everybody thought 2 years ago or a couple years ago when NIL started and this portal stuff started, oh, my God, it's the ruination of college football. It is not. You are going to watch it because most of the time, while alumni hold on to individuals, they cheer for the jersey. Okay? Now, you may need to really look at the roster and the flip card a little more of who's on the roster, but it is not going to hurt attendance. It is not going to hurt ratings. That's my opinion. I do not feel it will affect it at all. But does it make it harder for coaches? Yes. Is anybody going to feel sorry for coaches? No. They're all getting paid handsomely, and they can ditch after a year from a new contract, too. So nobody's feeling sorry for anybody. Does it convolute a bunch of things? I think it does, yes. Some do players overthink this, the players and their support group, on jumping from school to school? Yes. But if they have the ability to do it, if they think it's right for them, go ahead and do it. But, man, you are just going to see it over and over again.
So I think it's going to be interesting, though, because we're just getting more and more data on this, how that manifests as players learn more about this process, because it's been new for them. They've jumped in the portal to try and see if they can get a better financial windfall, a better player opportunity elsewhere, maximizing if they're a player at a smaller school that had a really good year, the exposure they can get somewhere else. And as we go along and there's more cautionary tales and we learn more, I'll be interested to see how it works given how each school conducts himself. Perfect example of what I mean here is Colorado.
Yeah.
They are coming up a lot in these conversations because they've got now in the two transfer portal windows that we have, one at the end of college football's
right.
regular season right around bowl season, and the other one after spring ball that we're currently in right now, the majority of the movement that we've seen is in the early one, in the one that's in December. What we're seeing now is the 21st player to enter the transfer portal post-spring ball for Colorado was running back Dylan Edwards, big-time player for them last year, who now is jumping into the portal. And that's not to say he might not come back, but, Dad, 21 players in the portal at this juncture
yeah.
is sort of wild. This is what we saw from Colorado last year, though, when Deion Sanders on the other side was basically doing roster cuts, which he's allowed to do,
right.
and which the rule exists so that coaches can come in and kind of flip the roster that way. But this is sort of like a reaping, sowing situation
yeah.
where if you decide to be the school that's going to live and die by the portal in this way, then players also have recourse. They have the ability to go out there and make that decision for themselves based on what they're seeing.
It's interesting. In a place I work out in Arizona where former players work out together, there is one of the guys I work out with who is a former player's son is at a school. I'm not going to name school or his name or anything. At a school and was waiting, wasn't sure where he fit into their plans and was waiting until after the spring game to see how he did in the spring game and what the coaches told him
sure.
after the spring game to then decide if he was going to jump into the portal. And understand, it can be difficult jumping into a portal and going to a new school after your spring game, because the first time you're going to see that new team is in summer workouts. But so this is a new time to go. It's getting difficult. And you mentioned with Colorado, remember, as you said, redid their whole team. I don't know where this team is going to go. I think, remember, they were the talk of everything last year, the way they came out of the gate. Shedeur Sanders, who was going to be one of the top draft picks next year, has one more year and he is going to be gone. You had a lot of guys going. Now you got a lot of guys ditching. You know, Deion Sanders is not a big recruiter of leaving campus and going out to homes to recruit. So I think that school, while it was a wow, look what they've done, I think they're in for a rough road. With who is leaving now and who they're trying to bring in, but it's going to be one of many schools that are going through this.
But there also haven't been many schools like that do it as extreme as Colorado's done it.
Yeah.
And I think it's going to be interesting because when you look at, I think the model for the teams that are the haves in college sports right now still is, hey, high school recruiting is the bedrock of our program.
Right.
We want to have as many homegrown guys to build that depth of talent that gives the Alabamas, Georgias, Ohio States, Michigans, the chance to be competitive year after year. And then we understand portal attrition is going to happen. Some guys that get here and wind up further down the depth chart than they plan are always going to leave. But we're also going to be able to go and add guys at positions of need. For us, treat it a little bit more like actual NFL free agency instead of these full-blown roster overhauls. What I'm interested in now is expanded playoff. We're going to see more teams that are further away from that, that just don't have the luxury, that don't have the ability, that don't have the means to do what those programs I just mentioned are. As you get down to, like, Ole Miss is a fascinating example. You look for a team that in the portal era has done it closer to what Colorado's done. Come to the SIP has been Lane Kiffin's cry since he's been there, and they've had success, especially in recent years, with that model. Are there teams in that range that are going to be more inclined to maybe go that route, and how are we going to see that show up as we start talking about more teams in the playoff race? I think that's really interesting because I think at the end of the day, the best formula for consistency is still going to be you go out, you recruit your ass off with the high school players there, and then you do your best at player retention to show people, hey, the culture that, look, culture used to just be a word you can throw around. Now you've got to kind of live it if you want these players to stick around. You've got to make good on your promises as a coach. And even then, that might still not be enough.
Well, I was just going to say, that may not be enough. You bring in a guy that you're trying to, you know, we look at our school, Notre Dame, you know, the last 2 years, it's not been the evolution of a quarterback that they've gotten. It's been bringing someone else. Bring in Sam Hartman. Bring in Riley Leonard from Duke this year, who didn't play in the spring because he's still dealing with that ankle. They got some young quarterbacks there. Will they be around to develop? Or do you keep bringing in another quarterback? You want to bring somebody in as an 18-year-old recruit with the thought process of developing them, but it could be out of your hands
at some
point.
But I think that's the perfect example is they finally built up depth in the quarterback room.
Right.
And they've got a transfer player they're helping out. They've built up depth on defense, and they were able to portal in wide receiver help from guys there at a position of need there. Notre Dame's one of the teams seems to have a good handle on their plan and their approach to the portal right now. For Colorado and others, a little more risk it for a biscuit that they're still waiting to fully show up and arrive on campus. We're just getting started here. Hour number two, we'll check in with a big-time quarterback prospect on Gojo and Goalie.
Without the ones like you, who work tirelessly to keep things running, everything would suddenly stop. Hospitals, factories, schools, and power plants, they all depend on you. No matter the weather, emergency, or time of day, you're the ones who get it done. At Grainger, we're here for you, with professional-grade industrial supplies. Count on real-time product availability and fast delivery. Call, clickgrainger.com or just stop by. Grainger, for the ones who get it done.